I remember when I used to run up those steps. My name is Hillary Draper, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. Good morning. Now, that tells you who I am and what I am. And when the two of us got up this morning, the who said to the what, we ain't going to take a drink today. And that's the way it's been. But it didn't used to be that way. It used to be we'd get up and the who would say to the what, we ain't going to take a drink today. And the what would say, who said so? And the who would say, I said so. And the what would say, just you wait and see. And the what would get drunk and the who would have the hangover. And I hereby officially give David permission to use that joke. And I won't charge him a nickel. Lest I forget my manners, many thanks to the committee for inviting me. I have not been in the best of health, and you know I celebrated my 70th birthday. Lord have mercy. But I'm here to tell you, the older I'm getting, the more fun I'm having. I am grateful for the people who asked me to come. My gracious, you know, to be on the same program with the two from Sweden, great day in the morning, and then the policeman from Chicago, man, I'm in high cotton, you know. And I would be alarmed, except that my sponsor told me years ago that speaking in front of an AA conference was not an oratorical contest, and that I didn't have to beat anybody. All I had to do was stand up and say what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. That's what you're going to get. And I'm going to look at my watch, and it says 10:22. We're going to be out of here at least the latest by 11:22. Guarantee. All right. So let's hurry up. I got a lot to say. I was born at a very early age in a good Christian home. I've heard so many alcoholics say that, I'm not sure it's any way to raise children anymore. But I was born at a very early age in a Catholic home in Mobile, Alabama. And we did not think it was wrong, morally wrong, to drink in moderation. Now, of course, we certainly did think it was morally wrong to get drunk, just like the Baptists and some of the Methodists do. But we didn't think it was wrong. It was always there. I cannot tell you when I had my first drink. It was always there. We didn't drink every day. We didn't have that much money. But whenever there was company, and I can remember very well, you know, you'd get a small glass, a little bit of wine in it, and fill it up with ice water, and you could be just like the big people, you know. And I hate to tell you this because it'll disturb some of you all. The big book tells me, I didn't learn that till way on, that the reason we drink is because we like the effects of drinking. Yikes. And you know what? I hate to tell you this. I found out the effects of drinking when I was an altar boy, 12 years old. Now, I'm sure that's going to scandalize some of you all. But if you don't know the church, like I know the church, you see, we take the boys at 12, 18, we did, and we teach them how to serve at the altar, and we use wine in the sacrifice of the Mass. Well, most priests couldn't stand it. It's very poor wine. And you were told as an altar boy, you don't, they didn't use the whole cruet, a little bitty cruet, about that big. They didn't use the whole thing, but you couldn't put it back in the bottle because it might sour the rest of the wine. And to pour it out was to waste it, so what do you reckon we learned to do with it? Right. And I discovered at that very early age that I could walk home the three blocks and never touch the pavement. I hope that doesn't make you feel bad, but that's the way it was with me. My father was dead when I was 4 years old, And I didn't know that I resented God for that. I did. I resented God for a long time. I didn't know I resented God until I got to you all. I had a marvelous grandfather who was the male image in my life, but he was not a baseball player. I had a marvelous mother. And when I was 15 years old, she decided I needed more men in my education. And so she sold me up the river to the tender mercies of the Benedictine nuns at Coleman, monks at Coleman, Alabama, and I never got away. Yeah. I was homesick. Oh, mercy, was I homesick. But I came to know some of the, what we called in those days, day dogs, the boys who didn't board, but who lived in Coleman. And in those years, the 30s, every housewife with the name in Coleman knew how to squeeze the grape and make that German-type grape juice. Only they did it with Coleman County strawberries. And if you all never tasted Coleman County strawberry wine before you got into AA, it's just too late. I'm serious. You'll have to wait till you get to heaven. The most gorgeous color of red I ever saw in my life. An aroma, when you took the cork out the bottle, you could smell it in the next block. And a kick like the proverbial Missouri mule. Oh, Lord have mercy. You weren't in any trouble because small glass of wine, piece of cake, somebody's home, fine, no trouble. I liked everything about the monks. I liked everything about Coleman. And after I finished second year of college, I asked if I could belong, if I could stay. And they said I could try. And believe me, I can't believe it. 51 years ago, I was 19 years old, I went into the monastery to try my vocation. And you know what I discovered? That the monks were not about to be outdone by the housewives of Coleman. And they also knew how to squeeze that grape and make that German-type grape juice, and they made a little homebrew on the side. You talk about a revelation to the Gentiles. Mercy. I don't want you to think there's 50 drunk monks at Coleman. There's not. There's me. The rest of them are pretty normal people. And they don't drink every day. Only on big feast days or in the summertime on a Sunday for an hour after Vespers. Come together, you know the German word, Gemütlichkeit. I don't know it in Swedish, but they probably got the same kind of word. You'd come together and they'd have the homemade wine and the homebrew and sandwiches and pink lemonade for the panty waists, you know. But it meant more to me. I was always the first one there and the last one to leave. I tell you, I was... I developed, from that time on, there were only two things that ever made me quit drinking. And I don't care what it was. As long as it was alcohol, I drank it. There were only two things that ever made me quit. Number one was I was too sick to drink anything else. And number two, there wasn't anything else to drink. Or at least I couldn't find it. And that's not normal drinking. There I am, 19 years old, in a monastery. And you know what happens to me? Christmas party. 8:30, quits, maybe 11:30, 11:45. But about 9:30, I go into a blackout. Now, just in case there's some of y'all here who don't remember what that is, I'll tell you. We drink and drink and drink and drink and drink, and the body, in order to save its own life, short circuits some of the systems. You go unconscious and you slide quietly under the table. That is not blacking out. That's passing out. And I have passed out, too. And there you stay under the table until somebody helps you home, you know. But in blacking out, you drink and drink and drink. And again, the body, to save its own life, short-circuits some of the systems. But this time, you go into, quote, temporary amnesia, quote. You continue to function, quote, normally, quote, but you don't remember it. And for all you Al-Anons who say to your spouses who are alcoholic, where were you last night? And he says, I don't remember. And you say, quit lying. Who were you with? He says, I don't remember. He may not be lying at all. He may not have the slightest idea where he was or who he was with. Lord have mercy. And the reason I tell you that is because I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that you never say about anybody else that he's an alcoholic or she's an alcoholic. He may walk like a duck, he may smell like a duck, he may quack like a duck, he may waddle like a duck, but if he doesn't say he's a duck, he's not a duck. But one of the almost Satan signs that you've got it is if you have experienced what I just described, the blackout. And if you are in the Al-Anon program and you recognize what I have just described, then I suggest that maybe you ought to move your letter over to the other side. But the point is, there I am at 19 years of age. I don't know why I'm an alcoholic. I don't. I remember after I was in the program about 2 years, it was in a closed meeting, and I asked them. This is my own group at Coleman. They meet above the pool hall. Very fine place. And I said, I want to know something. Why am I an alcoholic? What am I doing with my splendid aristocratic background? Hell, if the truth were known, degenerate Southern aristocracy. With my tremendous education. Lord, I've got degrees coming out of, oh, you wouldn't believe it. I've even been to Harvard. Can you imagine that? Yes. Lord, Lord. I said, what am I doing? An alcoholic. What am I doing? And Juby, who is still my primary sponsor, and Juby, well, first of all, that great silence comes over the group. You know, when everybody knows the answer, and they're waiting to see who's going to zap the fool. Finally, out of that silence, Juby, who's from North Alabama, a real redneck, he says, oh, Father Henry, it don't make no difference how the jackass got into the ditch. Just get him out. Isn't that glorious? So there I am, you know. I've got so many things to tell. I think I'm going to tell you one that's real good, though. You see this thing here that says speaker? Years ago, I was asked to be the Sunday morning speaker at the Tennessee convention. And that's not very far from where I live. It was in Chattanooga. And my secondary sponsor, who's gone to heaven, who at that time was the district attorney of the next county, he took me in his car and we went. And we got there, and it was a lovely convention, not near as big as this. We signed in, and he knew a lot of people. I didn't know too many people. And I had this badge. But as I went around, I noticed that people had the speaker ribbons. And I didn't have a speaker ribbon. Now, I want you to show you that I'm a real alcoholic. Now, I could have gone up to the desk and said, honey, y'all forgot my speaker ribbon. But I didn't do that. I built up a resentment. All day Friday, all day Saturday, it got bigger and bigger. Sunday morning when I stood up, I says, my name's Hillary Draper and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a real alcoholic and I'm loaded with resentment. And I'm going to tell you all about it. I said, first of all, I'm the cheapest speaker you ever got. It only costs you a tank of gasoline to bring me up here. Secondly, I've discovered I wasn't your first choice for Sunday morning speaker. I was the third choice. And I said, thirdly, everybody else got a ribbon. I didn't get one. I said, I want you to know that I am a real alcoholic, and I don't know whether I'm going to talk to you or not. You think I'm making that up? That's exactly how I felt about the whole thing. I gave the talk because my sponsor was sitting on the stage. He says, get on. But when I got back to Coleman the next morning, the post office department was in better service those years. I had an envelope and it had 8 speaker ribbons in it. So the point is, I've crossed that invisible line, 19 years old. I'm an alcoholic. And I know what an alcoholic is today. An alcoholic is a person who drinks and drinks and drinks and gets in trouble because he drinks. And drinks, and drinks, and drinks, and she gets into trouble because she drinks, and drinks, and drinks. If I got into as much trouble from eating watermelon as I got from drinking, I'd have quit eating watermelon a long time ago. You see? I also know from the big book that alcoholism is a disease that is a combination of a physical compulsion and a mental obsession to drink. And I know, too, that if you've crossed that invisible line between drinking controlled and uncontrolled drinking. It was mentioned by somebody else. There's only three ways to go. Either you end up nuts, or you end up dead drunk, in the literal meaning of that phrase, or you quit. And the horrible thing for me was when I got to the point where I had to quit. Notice I didn't say I wanted to. I had to quit. I discovered I couldn't do it. All right. So there I am. I've crossed that invisible line. Let me tell you this. The next morning after that blackout, when it dawns on me, there's a 2 or 3 hours that I don't remember nothing. I ask around, what happened? And apparently nothing happened. I stayed usual crazy, you know. Nobody saw anything different. Well, but being a smart kid, I had to figure out what caused that phenomenon. I didn't discuss it with anybody. I wouldn't tell a soul. Mm-mm. But in the back of my mind, I thought, wonder what was that was. I considered it philosophically with Aristotelian Thomistic principles. And I came to the astounding conclusion that it was the cheese. You don't believe that? I'm telling you, it's the truth. Now, I think way, way back in the back of my mind, I knew it was alcohol. But you see, at that time, I heard somebody else say, I loved everything there was about alcohol at that time. I loved the taste. I loved the smell. I loved the good times. I loved everything about it. I was the kind that would take a great big mouthful and let it trickle down my guzzle real slow and then suck my teeth. Great day in the morning. Oh, Lord have mercy. Lord, Lord have mercy. I told you what my style of drinking was. And in 47, I was ordained a priest. Believe me, if in those years there had been any overt signs that Hilary Draper was an alcoholic, he would not have been ordained. The Catholic Church has got enough trouble without ordaining drunk monks. The opportunities for drinking are there. I'm at this time the associate principal of a real fancy prep school, and I'm drinking too much, and I think the boss knows it, but he's not about to say anything to me about it. If he had said one word to me about drinking, I'd have been on him like a bee on a bulldog. I'd have said to him, what are you talking about? I'm drinking too much. I'm teaching 5 classes a day. I'm running this office over here. I'm keeping all the records. Why don't you get on some of these bums that aren't doing anything? Well, what I get is my first geographical cue of removal before I know what that is. You see, I was developing these terrible personality clashes with the boss. I think you can resolve personality clashes if there's enough goodwill on both sides, but you're not going to resolve anything if alcoholism is in the thing. That's all there is to it. Now, he doesn't say anything to me. What he does, he notifies me by the U.S. Postal Department that they don't need me anymore, and they want Father Timothy to come home, and I'm to go take his place in the mountains of southeastern Kentucky, a little place called Bobaville. And I didn't think they could run that school without me. Talk about resentment. I didn't talk to him about that. I got that letter go to Bobaville. I said to a confrere of mine in the mind, I said, where in God's holy name is Bobaville? He said, you go to hell, turn left, walk 3 miles. He was wrong. It was only 2 miles. Oh, Lord have mercy. I can't forget. I have to tell you real quick. The first morning I was in Bobaville in the mountains, Father Timothy, God rest his soul, he's gone to heaven. He came into this program a year after I did. And I think it was a much better AA than I. God love him. We had said Mass, and he says, now you take breakfast across the field at Aunt Sally Coon's house. That's your house, and Uncle Albert Coon is a retired miner. He's a Catholic, and he takes care of the property while you ride in the circuits. And whenever you're home, Aunt Sally feeds you over there. So we go across to a 4-room miner's cabin. They did have indoor plumbing. We're sitting at the kitchen table, and Aunt Sally, they've gone to heaven. Aunt Sally looked like nothing so much as Mammy Yoakum in the funny papers. You remember Mammy Yoakum? She had that pipe in her mouth, just exactly like Mammy Yoakum. She wasn't sitting at the table. Uncle Albert was at the table, lovely man in his 60s. Timothy was over there. I'm over here. The Uncle Albert's son, he's about 30. He's a state trooper. All he's got on is pair shorts. His 2 kids, 18, 16. And conversation was difficult. And sitting in front of me was a water glass, a tumbler, cold. It was hot September. I picked up that water glass, and I took two great big swallows. Would you all have seen the atomic bomb blast? I couldn't see. I couldn't hear. The hair on the back of my neck was standing straight up. I'm not exaggerating. That will tell you that I was an alcoholic. Because a non-alcoholic would have screamed a bloody murder. I just hang on tight till the... When I can see again, Uncle Albert's got one, Timothy's got one, the troopers got one, the kids haven't. Well, when that breakfast was over, Timothy and I are stepping high over the weeds, going back to the street. And I said to Timothy, in the Lord's holy name, what was in that water glass? He said, moonshine, 120 proof. I said, for breakfast? He says, anytime you can get it. What a place to send a budding alcoholic. And I bloomed, you know. I progressed. Oh, Lord. I say I didn't get into any trouble. I was there about 3 years. I met AA there. There was an AA group. I'll never forget that. And Timothy said to me, do you know anything about AA? I said, well, I hear people that are bad to drink. He said, yes. They've just started a little group here. This was a small town, 2,000 people. He said, I've been going to try to encourage them. And he says, maybe you want to encourage him too. I said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. Yeah. And I go to AA in Barbourville. Now, if you believe what I just said, that we never say about another alcoholic that you're an alcoholic, I often wondered in later years what those, there were about 7 men in the group, what they thought about me. You know? They would never let me go to the closed meetings. I felt if they would, I could help the poor devils. I can see now they tried every way they could to carry the message to me, but I wasn't ready. And brother, I didn't get the message. I didn't get the message. I'm recalled to the college. At that time, I become the academic dean. Oh, Lord have mercy. The patterns are there. I don't have to drink every day, but I've got a habit where I can look at it, where I can shake the bottle and look at the frog eyes. You remember that? And I don't, but once I start drinking it, I don't quit. Once again, these terrible personality clashes with the boss. Once again, this geographical cure removal that doesn't do a thing for you. And this time I got geographically removed to the delta of the Mississippi. Now, if you all think that's in southwest Louisiana, you are mistaken. It begins in the lobby of the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee. And it goes down the river, 40 miles on the Mississippi side, 20 miles on the Arkansas side, and you come to Yazoo City. And if you all haven't lived in that part of the South, you don't know what the South is all about. Those people do not know the Civil War was lost. They don't even know it was fought and couldn't care less. You talk about drinking as a way of life. Oh, Lord have mercy. And did I fit in? You know, I'm a priest. I was pastor. You know, it's the only parish I've ever been in where everybody who came in to see you, they were all Italians. Before they left, they would say, aren't you going to offer us a drink? Man, that was right down my alley. I'm telling you. Lord, Lord. But you see, it was progressive. And I was getting worse. And people were beginning to talk ugly about me, you know. You can't hide it. It's going to come out sooner or later. And it was coming out. And we had a new boss back at Coleman, damn Yankee from Minnesota. Didn't know a thing, came down to save us. You know? I say that, but today he did save my life, and I'm everlastingly grateful to him. He's still alive. I didn't know him. I was over in Mississippi. He's over in Coleman. I got a telephone call from his aide-de-camp. Says, the old man's got to go over to Dallas. He's going to spend the night with you. Can you take care of us? I said, oh, Lord, have mercy. Who's been blabbing? I said, yeah, sure, we'll be glad that we'd be here for supper. Fine. Well, man, I had the supper you wouldn't believe. The anti-anti-pasta, the anti-pasta, the pasta. Great big. Just wonderful. And we had drinks before and two kinds of wine with supper and drinks after. I didn't touch a thing. Not a thing. Well, he went to bed, and the next morning I said to his aide-de-camp, what did the old man want stopping over here? Well, he said, didn't he talk to you? I said, no, not you heard everything he said. Oh, he said, well, the Board of Trustees has nominated you as the 7th president of the college. And he said that as chairman of the board, he thought before he acted, he ought to come over here and interview you. And he told me last night that he was well satisfied he was going to accept me. And you know what? I got the bid. Now, watch again the alcoholic personality. If I hadn't been an alcoholic, with my track record, I would have said, there's no way I can do that job. What does the towering ego of the alcoholic say? Of course I'll take that job. You don't think they'd be offering it to a drunk? That'll show these people whether or not I got a problem with alcohol. They gave me, in Mississippi, a glorious send-off. I know today they were saying, thank God he's gone. Again, because of this marvelous program, I've been able to hold my head up and make amends in Mississippi. Oh, that's another story. It just keeps on getting better and better and better, honestly. So I went home and I was president of the college for 3.5 years. And I want to tell you that if you would like to have a way of life to practice alcoholism, get to be president of a college. You don't have to look for it. It's there every day, every hour of the day. All you have to do is pour it. And if you've got a big enough clientele, they'll pour it for you. And I have to say that everything, I did say to myself, now Hillary, you're going to be president of the college. You better watch it. You better take care. Oh, sure, I watched it. In 3.5 years, everything that hadn't already happened to me that happens to alcoholics happened. Yeah. I'm not proud. Jail. Can you imagine me in jail? I woke up one morning. I'm all dressed up in this black suit. I didn't have the gold chains and the big rings by that time, but I'm in jail. I don't know where I am, but I notice there's no mattress on this bed, and there's no pillow, and when I get my eyes open, there's bars at the window, and I thought, oh, Lord, you have played hell this time. And you know, you talk about resentment. I got up off that bed, and I got to that window, and the way they constructed that jail, I could not tell if I was in Birmingham, Nashville, Memphis, Mobile, New Orleans, or Rome, Italy. I didn't know how I'd gotten there. Oh, Lord. Y'all don't understand about small towns in Alabama. There are not many Catholics in small towns in Alabama. And there's always one who is Mr. or Mrs. Catholic Church. And anything that happens, the police or whoever call them up. Well, in that little town, it was Mr. Frank. And they called up Mr. Frank and they said, we've got a priest in jail here, drunk and disorderly, DUI. What do you want to do with him? He says, what's his name? He says, well, his driver's license says Hillary Draper from Coleman, Alabama. He said, just leave him there. I'll get him in the morning. I have to tell you that because I want you to realize that when they took me down to the sergeant's desk, you know, some of y'all know, I would rather have seen Pope John Paul II than Mr. Frank. You know why? Because Mr. Frank was the chairman of the Board of Trustees of the Hotshot College of which I was president. How you like that for a coincidence? Mr. Frank is dead. He was a marvelous, marvelous man. And filled with compassion, he said to me, Father, Hillary, this is terrible. We got to do something about this. And you know, I conned him. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Alcohol. Alcoholics are cunning, baffling, and powerful. I said, oh, Frank, I just had too much cheese. It was at the country club. I'll be all right. You know, he bought it. And I had a whole year yet to run. I had another year to run. But the end came, as it always does for alcoholics. I told you. You end up literally crazy, literally dead, or you quit. And what happened to me was about a year later, I was to give a report, the State of the Nation, to the college. And all the important people were there, the Board of Trustees, all the monks, the lay teachers, the faculty senate, the student government senate, oh, about 250 people. Lovely dinner like we had last night. And after the dinner, the president's to get up and give the report. I hate to tell you, the last thing I remember is 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm taking one more drink to steady my nerves. And I go into a blackout, and I gave that talk, and I do not remember to this day. I don't remember one thing about it. But when I tell you that, I can begin to shake and sweat because I can have some idea of what it must have been like for those marvelous people to have to sit there and watch and listen to the obviously drunken Catholic priest president of the council. That was my bottom. I didn't know it at the time. I figuratively have slit my throat from ear to ear. The next morning when I wake up and I come to, I notice the atmosphere on the campus is a little cool. 3 days later, I'm still throwing dust. You know how we do. Don't anybody know what's happening. And I go into the chancellor's office with some things. And he listens to me and then he says, sit down. I want to say some things to you. This is the Yankee from Minnesota. Oh, Lord, I came to know him. He smoked a pipe. And whenever the smoke was going straight up with sparks, that meant you were going to get it. And brother, the smoke is going up this morning. And he said, we had a meeting of the Board of Trustees yesterday. I said, you did. You didn't inform me. I'm a member of the board. Notice? Tricky? He says, no, but we had a quorum. And nasty. I said, what was on the agenda? He looks at me with all the compassion in his face. He says, there was only one thing on the agenda, namely your resignation. That was in December of 1967. And nasty. I look at him and I say, when is it effective? June? He says, no, it's effective right now. We've drawn up your resignation sign here. We have put up with all we're going to put up with you. You see, we didn't know what an intervention was in 1967. And I was intervened upon. He read me the Riot Act in 6 technicolor scene. He didn't know what alcoholism was. He told me I was a disgrace. That I dragged my own good family name through the mire. That I had outraged all the monks, that I had disgraced the college. It was just horrible. The reason I tell you all that is because when he finally let me go out of his office, you know what I did? I went right downstairs to my room and had another drink. I've just lost everything that means anything to me in life, namely the priesthood and St. Bernard, and I don't know that they can ever come back. And what do? I've lost them. There's a direct result of drinking. I go right downstairs and have another drink. Another nip at the tit of old Betsy. God, help and save us. Talk about insanity. The man had said to me, you will go and get some help with your problem of drinking, or you can get out of here. I'll help you get a job as a teacher anywhere in the country. You're a good teacher, but we will not put up with your behavior any longer. So I had an alternative. I don't know whether I was a prepared coward or what, but I just couldn't. What I really think is that it was all the Al-Anon type of people who knew nothing to do for me but to pray. And that if I caught the grace of the moment, because I said yes, I would go anywheres and do anything to get some help with my drinking problem. And that man from Minnesota had heard of a place named Hazelden, who were good to do bad things to people who were bad to drink and help them. And on January the 14th, 1968, I got sent to Hazelden. The temperature was 25 degrees below zero with a wind chill factor that I didn't even know what that was. Took you down to 40. No wonder those people drank. Dear Lord in heaven. Now, I hear people in our program, and this is a parenthetical remark, I hear people in our program talking bad about treatment centers. I noticed that Dr. Bob and Sister Ignatia ran a treatment center up in Cleveland for years. I noticed that the big book says that many of us needed a definite time of treatment in a hospital before we could get this marvelous program. I'm sorry. And people tell me, hey, it's not the same as it used to be. And of course it's not. It's alive. And to be alive is to change. Lord have mercy. Now, I know that there are treatment centers that I call gold-plated south traps. They'll take you in, take your money, dry you out, introduce you to the pills, and turn you loose to run again. But I was fortunate. In Hazelden, in those far-off years, all they did was to lock you up, the asylum type. Now, they didn't have any locks on the doors. But in Minnesota, John, they had these big Swedes that sat at the door. And I just dare you to try to get out of the door. That's all I know. They prided themselves. They didn't have locks on the door. But they had these bigger than him sitting at every door. Oh, Lord. But all they did in those years at Hazelden was to take you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Three meetings a day. And they were talking about the steps. Three meetings a day. And then they had these small meetings where they tried to get you to face yourself. I didn't like those much. I didn't like any of it. The first morning I was there, they took me down to see the counselor, and I'm all dressed up in my black dickie and my Roman collar and my black suit. And that man looked at me. He says, "Now, Father Hillary, last time I called you Father because you ain't nothing but a drunk." You know, I was going to call about in Coleman and say, "You have sent me up here not only with profaners, but blasphemers." He said, "Take off that Roman collar. You don't have any right to wear it." And I didn't. "Take off that black suit. You got no right to wear it. You are an alcoholic." Ooh, I hated that. And then the second thing he says, in those years, it was a 3 weeks program. And he says, "Don't you count on 3 weeks to get the program." I says, "No, I reckon I'll get it in two." I said that. "Oh," he says, "no, no." He says, "We find for doctors, lawyers, pharmacists, Indian chiefs, undertakers, professors, ministers, it takes 3 and 4 times as long to get this simple program." I said, "Why?" They said, "Because you all keep up such a dreadful front. It takes a long time to get behind there and find where the real Hillary lives." They were right. How about a slow learner? I got there January the 14th. I stayed during Lent. I stayed for Easter. Lord have mercy. And they gave me the big book. That's not true. They sold it to me. And they told me to read it. The first thing I did was open it up, see if it was imprimatured by a Catholic bishop. It's not. I said, "I'll bet you this thing is printed in Nashville, Tennessee by the Baptists. And I'm not going to be brainwashed and I will not read it." Can you, wasn't that a grand attitude? Oh, I wouldn't read it. Would not read it. Period. Now, they sold me the little 24-hour day book. That's not conference-approved literature. But it doesn't have any imprimatur from a Catholic bishop either. I loved it. I read it every day. Still do. But that big book, no way. Well, after I had been there 7 or 8 weeks, it became apparent to my cunning alcoholic brain that if I didn't read the big book, and if I didn't take the first 5 steps, I was going to be in Hazelden until Gabriel blew his horn. They've got to go to California, so we'll excuse them. Aren't they nice? You know, that they're real AAs, huh? To stay for as long as the program as they can. I was honored to be with them. Anyhow, I decided I better read the big book. And I did. I read the first 100 and said, "By actually, I had already memorized it because I'd heard it so long in the meetings, you know. But I read it. And I couldn't wait. I dashed down after breakfast to that counselor and I pranced into that office and I said, "I want you to know something. I have got step one. My life is unmanageable. I'm powerless over alcohol." He says, "You ain't got nothing. Get back." Can you imagine talking to me like that? I said, "I've got step one." He says, "You are loaded with resentments." I said, "I don't resent anybody." You know, I resented God. I resented the Pope. I resented the bishop. I surely resented that so-and-so from Minnesota. I resented all the monks in Alabama. I was loaded with resentment. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Let me tell you what finally got through to me. It's unbelievable. Somebody said, I don't think it was over there, that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Well, one Sunday afternoon, there was a knock at my door in Hazel, and I said, come in. And in came this little bitty man, woe be gone. I never saw anybody look so pitiful in my life. Little bitty creature, about that big. And I knew he was a Catholic brother. I knew that much about him. But he didn't have much to do with us at all. And so I said, come in. He said, the counselor told me that at the weekly meetings, they've decided that he's what they call the golden slipper. He had been through the program. They sent him home. That night he got drunk, and the next morning they put him back in. You know, it didn't take, so they're going to try again. And they said to him that his self-image was so low that he could go through a doorway with the door closed underneath it. And he further came up with the astounding statement that the faculty had said that Father Hillary is so far up in the clouds that if we can't get him down, the program will never work for him. So you go see Father Hillary, see if you can get him down, he can get you up. Wasn't that gorgeous psychology? And I'm looking at this creature. And I said, well, what's your name? He says, my name is Brother Joel. And I said, did they tell you how to do it? He says, no. I said, well, I don't know. Your name's Brother Joe. Yeah, and my name's Father Hillary. I said, what kind of brother are you? He said, I'm a Christian brother. We have a college down in Memphis. We used to beat them every year in baseball and basketball. Oh, man. Oh. I said, but we got a college down there in Alabama. He said, I was at the college in Winona, Minnesota. I said, what were you? He said, I was the president. He said, what were you? I said, I was the president. And you see, I was convinced in my arrogance and my pride that nobody as important as me had ever been thrown into Hazleton. And here was this little creature. He had two PhDs, and his college was three times bigger than mine. You know what? You talk about instant identification. Yeah. The both of us began that day to get better one day at a time. The marvel of this program. Oh, I laughed. The brothers were all up there at Winona close, you know, and they'd come see him on Sundays. And they'd come see me, too. And they were sitting there, I'll never forget, one Sunday, pious. And they said, do you all do basket weaving? I looked at me and we said, basket weaving? We're much too busy to do basket weaving. But I couldn't resist. You know, I told you I was at Easter. So, you know, you can get things done if you're an alcoholic. There's some big store up there in Minneapolis, I forgot the name. But anyhow, we got some Al-Anon to go to that store and buy the biggest Easter basket you could buy and have it delivered with a singing commercial to the brothers in Minnesota. And they stood at the door and sang with special greetings from the basket weavers of Hazleton. Oh, dear God. You had to take the five steps. I mean, they didn't fool with you. And they said 3 weeks. Well, you have to realize that Sister Ignatia used to do it in 3 days, way back when. Read your history and see. Anyhow, if you were on extended care, which I was, they'd get you through step one, two, three. I finally got through them. I didn't really get through step one until I was in this program for 2 years. I hated to stand up and say, my name is Hillary, and I am an alcoholic. I just hated that. But that was a measure of my sickness. That was a measure of my sickness. I didn't get comfortable with that for 2 years. The second step, I loved it. I was so happy to find out I was nuts, I couldn't see straight. You know, if what I had been doing was normal, Lord, I did have a problem. But to know that I could be restored to sanity. Step three, I thought God had deserted me, and I hadn't. He hadn't deserted me. I had walked away from God. And step three was a glorious reunion as far as I was concerned. I took step four. I took it to the man. He read it and he says, "Oh Lord, you made another horrible mistake. You have taken an immoral inventory." He said, "You're supposed to put down the good and the bad." I said, "I can't think of anything good." He says, "Didn't you love your mother?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Put it down." Oh, they were ugly. And then I had to do a fifth step. I thought, sure, they'd send me a Catholic priest. They did not. They sent me a Presbyterian minister. Lord, have mercy on my poor soul. When they got ready to send me home, they didn't want me to come home. They said, send him to a halfway house. So I got sent to a halfway house in Boston, up that way, New Hampshire. And again, nearly froze to death. I want you to realize, I'm not going to tell you, this in a way was good for me, in a way was bad for me. Because they had in that, it was the Diocese of Boston. And of course, with 300 priests, they've got some alcoholics. And they had a recovering alcoholic priest in AA who ran a house just for other priests. And so I would go down to them. Oh, they were something else. Lord, I'll never forget. I remember when finally I was going back to Alabama, I said to this marvelous priest, he's dead now, who was taking care of his brothers who were sick alcoholic priests. I said, "Now, you know, I'm going back to Alabama, and I don't know any AA back in Alabama." I said, "You reckon as soon as I get back there, I ought to start a group right away?" This priest looked at me and he said, "Sit down, Father Hillary. And if you know anything about AA, that means you're going to get it when they tell you to sit down." He says, "I suggest that when you go back to Alabama, you try to find a group that will let you in. And if you do, I suggest that you get a sponsor and you sit down and you keep your mouth shut. And if at the end of a year and a half, you are mercifully sober, you might begin to think about starting a new group." Well, Lord have mercy on my poor soul. Oh, I'm running fine. I got back to Alabama. I wish I could tell you that I looked in the phone book, found AA, went up the steps and lived happily ever after. I did not. I looked in the phone book and you weren't there. If I had anything to fault Hazelden with at that time, it would be that they didn't know how to use our big book, you know, our directory, and say, "Now, Hillary, when you go back to Coleman, call this number." Because it was in the directory. I think they've learned something by this time. Because if they had told me that, I would have called that number. But they didn't tell me that. I couldn't find it. You weren't in the phone book. You were too poor. And I stayed. I got back to Coleman in September. My treatment lasted from January to September. That's the way it was. And I got home and I didn't go to AA. And I'm so great in these days when I'm sponsoring somebody, "Go to the meetings, go to the meetings." Hell, I didn't go to a meeting from September till January. It's the one I didn't end up, you know, right back in the bottle. And there was a priest there, Father Luke. Cece knows him. He's not an alcoholic. He would say to me, "Aren't you supposed to be going to some kind of meetings or something?" I said, "Yeah, but they don't have them in Coleman." He said, "Well, surely they've got them in Decatur. That's only 30 miles up the line. Why don't you go up there?" I said, "I don't need them. I read the big book and I share my experience, strength, and hope with people I think will do them some good." How about that classical two-stepper? Well, along in December, the same priest came to me and said, "For your information, AA is alive and well in Coleman. Call this number." Notice, I can't find it. He can find it. Every day he'd say to me, "Did you call?" I said, "Yeah, they don't answer." And then he asked the right question. "When do you call?" I said, "Midnight." I'm not making that up. He said, "Call them now." So I did. And I got Juby. Still my sponsor. Oh, no. And Juby's a redneck. I told you that. I said, when he answered the phone, I said, "Mr. G, I'm not going to tell you his last name, break his anonymity. I said, my name's Father Hillary. I'm out here at the college. I'm an alcoholic and I need to go to an AA meeting." There's this long silence on the phone. And then you see the realism of the program. The first thing that man ever said to me was, "Father, are you drunk now?" I said, "Of course not." "Well," he says, "it just so happens we're having a meeting tonight at 8 o'clock. I'll be out there at 7:30 to pick you up." I said, "Well, that's fine, Mr. G, but don't come to the front of the college. I'll meet you down on the road to the cemetery under the tall pine trees in the dark of the moon. I'm not making this up." It's a wonder he didn't say to me, "When you want what we've got and willing to go to anything, call me back." He didn't. "And if you come to Cullman, I'll show you the road to the cemetery and the tall pine trees and the bushes I crawled out of to go to my first meeting. I'll show them to you." And I went to my first meeting, and it was upstairs over the pool room, where it still is. But it looks a lot better today. When I went up those steps that night, I looked through that glass door, small room. Lord, the plaster was coming down off the ceiling. The wallpaper was rolling off the walls. One naked light bulb hanging down, hole in the floor where they swept all the trash down on the next people. Old sofa with the springs coming out. And about 12 people, and they all looked like foot washing Baptists, a Church of Christ to me. And I thought, "Lord have mercy, what am I doing here?" Now, please, don't be offended. That's the way it was. It's not that way today. If you come up those steps, I don't care what you are, snake handler, doesn't make a bit of difference to me. If you want what we've got, then you are welcome if you're there because you want to stop drinking. But that's not the way it was at that time. My ego, you know, "Oh, Lord, I'm standing." Now, a good sponsor knows when to disappear and get out of the way. And Juby disappeared, but it was 2 miles back to the college. I wasn't about to walk. So I'm standing there looking through the glass door, you know, and here comes a lady dressed up like you all were dressed last night. Beautiful lady. I knew her as a Catholic matron from Decatur, Alabama. I did not know she was an alcoholic. She walked up to me and she says, "Hello, Father Henry." And I said, "Rosemary." She said, "Yes, come on in. Have a cup of coffee. You're going to be all right. You won't have to drink anymore." And that woman put her arm through mine and mesmerized me right through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did not know for 2 years that it was a put-up job and she was a shill. You talk about, you know, how to carry the message. It's in the big book. When I called Juby, Juby called Rosemary in Decatur, and he says, "You come down to Cullman tonight to the meeting." She says, "I can't. I'm chairing my own meeting." He says, "I don't care what you're chairing. You get down here tonight. I got a Catholic priest coming in here. I don't know a damn thing about Catholics, much less priests. You're a Catholic. You get down here and help me with him." And when the poor, stupid, drunken Catholic priest is trying to get through the doors of AA, there's Rosemary. I don't know. It's the first time that I've ever been to a convention where I had a hostess with the mostest. Generally, I get a man or a couple, but you all handed me Joni L. I'm telling you, I have come up the line. And she has surrounded me for the past evenings with her cronies, who are magnificent women in this program. And brother, I've had the best time you ever can imagine. You see, I'm harmless. Too late, too late, too late. But Rosemary was there that night. Rosemary's still in the program. She's not well. She can't go to many meetings. But I'll tell you, I'll walk a long, long way for Rosemary. I shudder to think what in my pride and arrogance would have happened to me if she hadn't been there that night to hold out the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous. But she was there. And that began the odyssey. I'm not the same man I was at all when I came into this program. You see, I still had steps 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. We heard about them yesterday. I'm not going to repeat them. I had all those steps to do. And I'm still doing them. If you ask me what step I'm on today, I'll tell you step 11. It's that simple, period. If you ask me what my home group is, I'll tell you Saturday Night Live in Lillian, L.A., Lower Alabama. If you ask me who my local sponsor is, I'll tell you. But of course, I want big sponsors. My sponsor is the present delegate from the state of Alabama. I mean, I don't want a winner. I don't want just anybody. After all, great day in the morning. I think that's important. If somebody asks you in this program, what's your home group? And you say, use them all. And they say, who's your sponsor? And you just say, well, anybody I run into. And they say, what step you're working on? And you tell them, well, I'm working on them all. I'm just a little worried about your program. That's all. But if it keeps you sober, that's all right. Well, I've still got loads of time. I don't have loads, but I have made every mistake you can make in this program, except I have never taken another drink. You know? I can remember asking, after I'd been in the program 3 or 4 years, now pay attention to this. It was a closed meeting, and I said, well, now, hey, I want to know something. I have been sober. I think I was dry. I've been sober some 2.5 years now. And what I'd want to know from you all is, if I don't manage my own life sober, who's going to manage it? That's a great question, isn't it? And again, that great silence over the group. And Juby, once again. Father, step 3 said made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And step 11 says sought through prayer and meditation. I says, shut up. Don't tell anybody I asked that question. I'm serious. Here I am, a trained theologian. And I knew at one time that it was the God of my understanding who was supposed to rule my life. But here I am in Alcoholics Anonymous, got to relearn theology. Lord, have mercy on my poor soul. I have to tell you that everything good, and I think that's a correct statement, everything good that has happened in my life since I came up the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous has come to me through Alcoholics Anonymous. I could spend another hour telling you the marvelous things, the coincidences, the times when God prefers to remain anonymous that have come to me through Alcoholics Anonymous. In 1972, I'd been in the program 5 years or so. The man from Minnesota retired, and the 33rd degree monks got together to elect the new boss. Yeah. And they don't do any log rolling. They don't do any speech making. They pray. And after they pray, they start balloting. And August the 20th, 1972, when they got through with that election, the young monks are not allowed to vote. But they're naturally very interested. They ring all the bells. They came, who was elected the head honcho? And that day the word went out that Father Hilary was elected the 7th abbot. And all the young monks are running through the halls of the monastery shouting all the way with AA. That's what these gold chains are about. And this big ring. Man, you ought to see me dressed up. I'm a very important person in the Catholic Church. The marvelous thing is that the monks accepted me as a recovering alcoholic and knew that I needed to stay close to you all if I was going to function. And just one thing after the next has happened. The most recent, I underwent triple bypass heart surgery in April. And I'm a celibate landlord, and it was in Pensacola. I was away from the monastery. And when you're like I am, you go in to the hospital by yourself, and you go into the operating room by yourself. You don't have anybody sitting there wailing and weeping over you, you know. And when I got through with this, the second night, I was feeling very, very down and very, very low, very, very much by myself. And the charge nurse, you know what a charge nurse is, I hope. Do we just have them in the deep south? That means they in charge. That's what it means. The charge nurse came into my room. Oh, I had a suite. I'm VIP. You know, the nuns, they're Lord Abbott's in here. Well, this charge nurse comes in and she says, "Hello, Hillary." I said, "Do I know you?" She says, "Saturday Night Live in Lynn." All of a sudden, everything was fine. You know? There she was, another alcoholic. And I'm telling you, if you think the nuns gave me great service, you should have seen the way those nurses hopped to. I'm telling you, AA all the way. I could tell you a million things. It's been marvelous. I'm going to try to end up in a different way than I usually do. Uh-oh, it's time for me to quit. Well, this is something, you know, you keep reading. And this jumped out at me in my own group, and I had never really realized it before. It's from the 12x12, and you can find it on page 124. And it'll tell you what I am trying to be like today. It said that this was written 14 years after the big book by Bill W., and that it is the second set of promises. Listen to it, and then I'll shut up. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted are solved with God's help. The knowledge that at home or in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort. The well understood fact that in God's sight, all human beings are important. The proof that love freely given surely brings a full return. The certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons. The surety that we need no longer be square pegs in round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living, for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions, could possibly be substitutes. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. So much for our founders. Thank you for listening to me.